Hardware season round two. The gold pants are secured, and now it is time to go get a silver football for Ohio State. And if the Big Ten championship game is Saturday night at 8 o'clock, that must mean that today is Freaky Friday on the beat presented by the Waterworks. But it's not time for bold predictions yet. We're going to get to that later. We're throwing in a bonus mailbag. Maybe the bonus is bold predictions. I'm not sure. But we know that there's a really long wait between Friday morning's episode of the beat and a primetime kickoff on Saturday. So, Berm, that's him, Jeremy Birmingham. I'm Austin Ward. We're going to have television's Adam King. We're going to have bold predictions at Lucas Oil Stadium later on Friday, because the Austin and Berm show is absolutely fired up for the Big Ten championship game.
It's crazy, but it's been so long since we've been there. And even in the last couple of years when they've, you know, Big Ten Media Day, now moving to Las Vegas, it feels like that was our home away from home for a while. And now it feels like we haven't been there. It feels like a nice welcome return. I'm really excited for this game. Again, you know, we were talking about it after recording Snap Judgments on Wednesday night, but I don't know how many times, you know, you said there's only maybe been like 61 versus two matchups in the history of college football. Ohio State will be playing their second one this year, and that's pretty awesome that we get to be a part of it. It's, again, probably like the least talked about number one versus number two matchup in college football history, because it doesn't matter. Obviously it matters to Ohio State to win and Indiana to win, but in the big picture of the sport, it doesn't matter. Both of these teams are going to get an off week after this game is over. Both of these teams are going to have a bye week. They're going to be in the top four, and they're going to be in either Los Angeles or Dallas, almost seemingly barring some craziness around the country. So the stakes in this game are really simply about that. It's about hardware and bragging rights for the Big Ten, but not ultimately for the national championship. So that would make it probably, you know, the first one of these one versus two matchups in this new era that really, well, I guess the second one since Ohio State played one in week one, but that just doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if you win or lose as far as what it means for your ultimate season.
Well, losing it definitely mattered to Texas, because they followed that up by losing to Florida. So,
well, they shouldn't have lost to Florida then. It's okay to lose to Ohio State.
All this talk about from Steve Sarkisian, and I think he's right to a point. He didn't write in to the mailbag, by the way.
Like, are you sure?
They probably would be in the playoff if they had played Bowling Green instead of Ohio State, but they also would be in the playoff if they had simply beat Florida. So a lot of this stuff.
Or beat Ohio State.
Yeah, they could have done that too, but that stuff, that has nothing to do with the Big Ten championship game. But I was thinking, you know, it's true that I say a lot of things that I wind up regretting, and that I am an idiot. But I think back to like 5 years ago, Berm, when it's like, oh my God, we're going back to Indianapolis again. Like, we're here every 2 months. How many times do we have to go to Indianapolis? And it's like, you know, be careful what you wish for. It could be a lengthy time till you get to go back for a championship game, a hardware game, a talent equated, maybe game. And now I'm just really, I'm thankful that we get the opportunity to do it again. Whether people around the country want to say it's meaningless for seeding or not, I mean, I'm taking my cue from the people in the Woody. They really want to win this game. I've said that every day, and I have to say it again right now.
Yeah, and I understand it. I also understand it from the perspective that if you aren't number one, maybe you can avoid Notre Dame or Oklahoma, which I think would be the two of the tougher matchups for Ohio State. So I'm also interested to just see how it plays out. I obviously want the Buckeyes to win, because they want to win. They want some hardware. They want the Big Ten championship. They want guys like Caden Curry to be able to celebrate at home with his family there in Indianapolis. And you know, we said that the Texas game has nothing to do with this game. And obviously, for the most part, it doesn't. But I do think that there are some interesting conversations about the hype leading up to that game with Arch Manning and the way that Ohio State's defense handled him. And now all of the hype and buzz around Fernando Mendoza and this idea that he is a quarterback Ohio State won't be able to handle or whatever. So I'm curious. We did not talk to Matt Patricia on Wednesday night after practice, which would be the first time in a couple months that we haven't had a conversation with him. And it was weird because he was quickly off the field, right? So that is abnormal for him. Normally he's one of the last guys out there working with his defensive players and just shooting the breeze with people. So I think that's telling.
Yeah. Got to go back and get in the lab. We know what he's capable of when he spends all that extra time preparing. Interesting that you bring up the Ohio State coaching staff, because surprise, surprise, the first question that I saw when I opened up the Austin and Berm show at gmail.com email account. You can continue to send in those emails, by the way. A lot of you reaching out this week and just saying thanks for the, we got some pictures of trips to the big house and people celebrating. That was awesome too. You're always more than welcome to send that to us. Even if you don't have a question for the mailbag, the comments, all that stuff, we appreciate all of it. We try and keep up the best we can. I know I'm not the best. Sometimes Berm's better than me, but the first one I opened in here came from Courtney, and it was about Brian Hartline. He said he's trying to cope with the Brian Hartline news, but having what sounds like Berm level anxiety for the game with these changes. Who do you want or who do you see as targets for their placement? And does Brian Hartline take anything with him? That last part, I know we're going to get back into that. There's Keenan Bailey questions for us as well. So we'll put a pin on that for now. But we're 42, 48, 72 hours into this, Berm. Like, I firmly believe, and I know that you do too, that Ryan Day is going to take his time with this. So we can, you know, put up hypothetical hot boards, but in terms of like nailed down predictions, I don't know that we can do that.
No, but there's also different layers to this, and I want to apologize to anybody watching. I copy and pasted the
don't blame Courtney. Don't blame Courtney.
I should have caught it. It says Hartline. Obviously, there's a T missing there, but it's not the T that Ohio State's worried about. It's the O, and it's the OC. So I think that there's two levels to this. That was pretty good on my part right there. You're welcome, America. This is not something where you have to hire someone who is the offensive coordinator and the wide receivers coach. Like this, because of the fluid nature of the coaching staff and who else knows what happens, and we'll certainly talk about that. But there are two levels to this. There's A, finding a replacement for a wide receiver coach, and B, finding a replacement at offensive coordinator. And so I don't think that it's something that is going to be solved quickly. We had a brief conversation with the head football coach at Ohio State on Wednesday evening, and he said pretty explicitly he's going to take his time. I got the sense, and Austin, you can tell me if you're wrong, from that 2-minute sidebar that we had with Ryan Day, but my opinion is that the wide receiver coaching job can be filled and likely will be filled a lot quicker than the offensive coordinator job. I think the offensive coordinator job is one that's probably not going to be filled till after the season is over for Ohio State, and I think the wide receiver coaching spot, especially with the, as we record this on Thursday afternoon, Jerquaden Guilford and Chris Henry Jr. still not signed in the class of 2026. I think that there's a real scenario where the guy that replaces Brian Hartline at wide receiver might be on the staff. And we'll talk about that. But as far as the OC goes, it's almost impossible right now to narrow down a Ryan Day list because A, he doesn't have one. And B, because the last couple of years when we've seen these searches for the offensive coordinator spot, it has taken wild turns. And then we saw what happened with the Matt Patricia hire. So, 3 years ago when Ryan Day hired Jim Knowles, it was a no-brainer. Jim Knowles was the hottest off the defensive coordinator in the country. It was a bidding war between Ohio State, Clemson, and Penn State. He chose Ohio State because of all the guys the Buckeyes had coming back. This is not a similar situation, but not just because there's not a truly like hot name offensive coordinator out there. I know people are talking about Jerry Neuheisel and stuff like that, but that seems folly to me. The bigger reason is because Ryan Day's learned a lot of lessons in the last few years, and he's learned he does not need to hurry these coaching hires as long as he gets them right. And that started with Tony Alford's departure, and it went into the hires of the new offensive and defensive coordinators last year.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I completely agree. I believe that these hires are likely to be separate. Maybe there's an ideal candidate out there that could coach wide receivers and recruit and call plays at the same level of Brian Hartline. I think it's more likely than not that Keenan Bailey would shift over to take over wide receivers. He has put in plenty of time. He's worked with both Brian Hartline and Zach Smith before that in terms of GA, quality control, analyst, whatever position you want to call that, as they moved him around. And he was proving his value at Ohio State for a long time before he became the full-time coach and took over the tight ends, Keenan Bailey. Proved himself as a really good recruiter there. You can weigh in on that when we get to the next Keenan Bailey question. But I do think that promotion, working alongside Devin Jordan, who I think Ohio State will certainly want to retain, and you know, maybe there's a way that you can split those responsibilities. I don't know. I just think that however that position is going to be managed will still involve those two somehow, and that the offensive coordinator hire will come from outside. When the question is, you know, who do you want? I actually believe that the building of the New England Patriots Infinity Gauntlet looks pretty appealing right now. Brian Daboll I don't think he's going to get the Penn State job. I don't know if he wants the Penn State job. He has a built-in relationship with Matt Patricia. And then if we're talking about like filling in the cracks, he is also a pretty decorated tight ends coach. So then that would make sense with the way that you're restructuring that staff. If we're, that's what I think would make a lot of sense. Is that a prediction that that's how it's going to end? It is not. But I think that there are a lot of obvious reasons and connections that we can make that would have that fit. He also spent some time on Nick Saban's staff. I believe during the national title run 6 years ago.
He was their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach in 2017.
All right, longer. So 8 years. My math is bad. And then
went to be the offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills for 4 years before being the Giants head coach for 4 years. So like resume-wise, it's hard to beat a guy like that.
Yeah. So again, math is not my strong suit, but I think there's also an element at play here where you mentioned Ryan Day's approach and his patience and the way that he gets it right. It'd be great if Matt Patricia stays forever, but we saw what impact he could make in just 1 year. We saw what Chip Kelly could do in just 1 year before he moved on. If Ohio State is going to maintain this level of success every single year, you could have to deal with changes at offensive coordinator. Brian Daboll improved his resume and his opportunities with 1 year at Alabama under Nick Saban. Ryan Day, I am not saying he has achieved what Nick Saban has, but Ohio State has become the program the way that Alabama was in the 2010s. And if it becomes a spot where NFL caliber head coaches, coordinators see this opportunity to work with the Buckeyes, work with Ryan Day and stay for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, or just love it and stay forever, you know, great. Those are the kind of candidates that Ohio State can now attract, and they have the money to pay them as well. And the pressure at Ohio State, believe it or not, even though we treat every day like fourth and inches on the beat, is less than being an NFL head coach and arguably with a lot more job security. So I think that Brian Daboll makes sense. If you're asking if you're asking me who I think makes sense and who I would actually like enjoy watching, I think that's where I'd start.
Yeah. If I was picking today, that's probably where my mind would go. But obviously we know, as we said, this is likely going to go 6-7 weeks for Ohio State until the season's over for them, no matter what. So six, seven. Nick Saban is a guy that Ryan Day has gotten to know and become pretty familiar with in the last couple of years. He's turning into a mentor for Ryan. And this is a situation where the Buckeyes know their worth. They know their value. And especially for an offensive coordinator, because it's Ryan Day's offense. You don't have to come in and make wholesale changes. You don't have to come in and light the place on fire, because Ryan Day's offense is what's there. Your job is to come in and tweak it and manage it and to add to it and to enhance it. And so a guy like Brian Daboll makes a ton of sense to me, even more so than a guy like Chip Kelly, because that's already been done. And I don't think Chip Kelly is someone that is interested right now after the year that he just had in Las Vegas in immediately jumping back into the coaching pool. I would be surprised if that happened. Again, there's going to be names. We're going to hear a ton of them. But as we saw with the initial hire of Bill O'Brien and then the hire of Matt Patricia, the hire of Chip Kelly, the name that Ryan Day settles on is likely not going to be one that people are talking about. And but from a what makes sense standpoint and what would be a great choice today, if you wanted to like tell people, hey, this is going to be our guy and he's going to be here after the season's over, I would imagine that there's been a phone call with Brian Daboll already. That would surprise me if there hasn't been. Like the resume is too good. The experience is too good. He's been an NFL head coach and a coordinator and assistant since 2000, minus the 1 year in Alabama. He's also coached tight ends. And so if you look for a potential alignment fit, if you need that offensive coordinator to be in charge of another position, if Keenan Bailey were to move and take over the wide receivers, then you need a tight end coach. And Brian Daboll, who coached tight ends in New England for 6 years, for 4 years, would be a really good choice in that role too. So it would be almost like this mind meld of like what Kevin Wilson was for Ohio State and what Chip Kelly was for Ohio State. So I think that's certainly where my mind goes first. I mean, that is the one that makes the most sense. And if I was Ohio State, I would probably not waste a lot of time knowing that there's going to be opportunities for him elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that.
But I'm not Day,
no, I know. Yeah, neither of us are. Ryan Day is likely to be patient, but winter doesn't wait, and neither should you. The Waterworks and Header Heating and Cooling And plumbing is there to make sure your home is ready for cold mornings, icy nights, and everything in between. Stay cozy all season long and call the Waterworks and Header Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing at 614-232-2222. So that's part one of the coaching conversation, and we'll come back to that. But Justin also wrote in, and I'm going to be honest. He wrote about this, applying it to the game last week. I took a separate question from him, and I decided to save this one and then recycle it for the playoff run. But he said, outside of Bo Jackson, what freshman or otherwise seldomly used to this point player do you feel may have a moment or plays that impact the postseason and take their career to the next level? I think that's a great question because there's still so much football left.
Yeah. It's interesting because obviously so much of the conversation this week has been about the wide receiver situation now at Ohio State, and who knows what happens or what Brian Hartline's interests are going to be and who he tries. This is the hard part of coaching changes. Like, it's now Brian Hartline's job to try to get one of these guys to go to South Florida with him, you know, like, it's kind of weird. I think there's still an opportunity for Bryson Rogers to do something in one of these games that is going to put him on the map in a way that it felt like a month ago he was really starting to develop. And then the weirdness happened with the Rutgers game where Bryson Rogers and Mylon Graham didn't really play. I still think that Bryson Rogers is a guy that does something and brings something different to the wide receiver group. And as defenses find ways in the playoff run to take away Jeremiah and Carnell or try to, I think it really does open the door for someone else. And Bryson Rogers is the guy that continues to stick out to me because every time he's on the field, he makes plays. We watched him all spring. He's toasting the Ohio State secondary. Not a lot of guys have done that in this season across the country. So if he's able to do it, it makes me think that there's more to him than we've seen. And I think Bryson Rogers is a guy that is still going to get that moment.
Yeah. I mean, and Ohio State has made it no secret throughout the year, Berm, that they're going to need to play that depth. If they're going to play four more games, we know, like, Ohio State is in a better health position right now than they were going into the game. We know that for Jeremiah. We know that for Carnell. Brandon Ennis looks like he's just getting beat to a pulp in every single game. If there's some way that a fourth or fifth wide receiver could contribute over the stretch, that would be incredibly important for Ohio State. I would love for that to be Mylon Graham in the postseason. I think Bryson Rogers has separated, to your point. Every time he's got an opportunity, he's made the most of it. That hasn't quite been the case for Mylon Graham. I'm not leaving the bandwagon, but I am acknowledging that yours is probably a faster bandwagon at this exact moment. So that's a good pick. I think defensively, and maybe this is a little bit too reactionary, I don't know. I CJ Hicks is gonna play at some point, right? I mean, he's eligible to go. The redshirt discussion is over. And I said earlier in this week that, you know, Caden Curry and Kenyatta Jackson in these talent equated games, we saw how many snaps they got last week, all of them. And moving forward, they're likely to get that same level of workload. But between if anybody needs a breather, whether that is Kenyatta or Caden or potentially even Arvell Reese, you think back to the first game of the year and CJ Hicks didn't need 20 or 30 snaps to make an impact. He had three tackles in the Texas game, and he was the one that got the pressure on Arch Manning on the deciding play in the fourth quarter. That's still in him. Now, I know he's not played in 2 months in live action, and it's not easy to just go back out there and do it. I don't think he's going to be a starter. I don't think he's going to have games where he gets 25 snaps. But if the question is a moment, I feel like there's a way that that can happen in one of these four games that, if we're talking about taking him to the next level, that would be very meaningful for him as a catapult into next year based on what he's trying to do with Matt Patricia, Larry Johnson, and embracing this opportunity to learn and grow as an edge threat with one more year of seasoning. I think it's possible.
Yeah, there are not a lot of guys on the defense, I mean, outside of maybe Arvell, who have what you just call it game-changing, like instant impact type ability to make a play that you're like, holy crap, that was special. And CJ has that athleticism. He has that explosion. It's just about everything lining up correctly on that one play. Obviously, you have guys like Caleb who are like the steady every down superstars. But I think that there's an opportunity for someone like CJ to make like a Darren Lee type impact at some point where you're like, holy moly, that guy just had a day where he went absolutely bonkers. But if the question's asking freshmen or younger guys, I still think that there's an opportunity for Zion Grady to make some plays here in this playoff run. I really like what we've seen out of him. And as a defensive end, Ohio State did not even rotate that position at all against Michigan. I don't think that that will be the case or in the rest of the way. I think you're still going to see some rotation. It seems to me like Zion Grady has elevated himself into the conversation, maybe ahead of Bo Atkinson as the third defensive end. And so I think that there's an opportunity for him to do that and be that guy. And I'm still waiting for that Devin Sanchez play where people are like, oh, okay, it's there for him. And he had the nice interception on the 2-point conversion against Rutgers when it didn't matter. But he is a guy that I think is still waiting for that welcome to the NFL, welcome to the big show type of experience. So also, if you're interested and you have Paramount, you can watch Devin Sanchez on Five Star. It is a behind-the-scenes documentary at Devin Sanchez, Bryce Underwood, and a few other of the country's highest-ranked freshmen.
Yeah. All right. So Berm goes with three freshman picks there, and I went with the seldom.
You know who the guy is, though, to me, and it's stupid because he's a senior and he's a starter, but it's Kenyatta Jackson. Like, if there's a guy who can
He's not seldomly used.
I know, but like, if there's a guy who can elevate himself and take his career to the next level, yeah, in these next 4 to 5 games, it's Kenyatta Jackson, because I think he has shown flashes throughout this year, and now it's getting consistent where, like, he's, if you look at the frame, you look at the athleticism, you look at now the maturity and the mentality and everything that's evolved for him, I think Kenyatta Jackson has a better opportunity to turn himself into a top 20 pick in the next month and a half than any player in the country.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. I was going to say he's got the probably most to gain in terms of potential draft stock during this postseason, which would then set up a fascinating dynamic for his NIL or one more year of eligibility left for him, and put some other dominoes in play for Ohio State that they would have to manage in January. This came in from Kevin, and it was back to the Brian Hartline conversation. Could you see Brian Hartline pulling Keenan Bailey with him to serve as his offensive coordinator? Who else could you see him tapping to leave for South Florida with him on either side of the ball? And then he also asked about who we'd see replacing those spots on staff. So we got into that, and I would say that I don't know that Ohio State will need to worry about replacing the wide receivers coach, because I would actually be very surprised if Keenan Bailey does not fill that role. And I would be just as surprised if, given all of the other group of 4 or 5 or 6, whatever level we're going to call that, coordinator jobs, assistant jobs that Keenan Bailey has had over the last 5 years, that South Florida would be the one that lures him away from Ohio State. There, I say this every offseason, and I can't guarantee it for anybody, but even as a position coach at Ohio State, the salary pool has elevated to such a level that that is not climbing the ladder anymore to go take a G5 coordinator position. And I know that he has familiarity with Brian Hartline, and Brian Hartline is going to need to hire a staff that has the ability to execute what he knows, his vision. And Keenan Bailey would fit into that boat. But I think that he is, if I had to guess, still Keenan Bailey would be more likely to take that wide receiver job, a very comfortable salary to stay at Ohio State, knowing that there's still even potentially a higher rung that he could climb down the road with the Buckeyes. So I personally don't think that Brian Hartline will be hiring anyone, any of the countable coaches on Ohio State staff to go drop down a level or several levels to USF. I know that there are people down there that cover that team who are like, well, he's going to bring Keenan Bailey and James Laurinaitis. And I would say there is practically no reality where I can imagine that happening.
I certainly don't see it happening with James Laurinaitis. For reference sake, the 2024 South Florida offensive coordinator, Joel Gordon, made $450,000 a year as the offensive coordinator at South Florida. I don't know what the salary was in 2025 for their guy, but Keenan can make more than that as the wide receivers coach at Ohio State and the wide receiver coach slash co-offensive coordinator in Columbus. I think, and you brought up Devin Jordan in the first question, but I think if you're looking for someone
right now as a tight ends coach, he makes $650,000.
Right. So, I don't know what the salary pool is going to be for Brian Hartline. I'm sure he's negotiated something decent or better than what South Florida has had, but it's still going to be hard to match that if you're looking just pure numbers. Now, opportunity being what it is, maybe it's different. Maybe their friendship is enough to make Keenan consider that. Maybe the fact that Keenan's from Florida is enough to make him consider that. But it does seem harder to envision that happening, especially because as a wide receivers coach at Ohio State, with his ties to South Florida, his ties to South Florida Express, he has a lot of residual value that Ohio State it really still needs at this point. I think Devin Jordan honestly makes more sense to me as Brian Hartline's wide receivers coach at South Florida, if I was going to pick someone, because he's a guy that is in a position now where he's basically been Brian's assistant wide receivers coach for what, 3-4 years. That would make more sense to me, understanding that he's unlikely to be promoted into that role at Ohio State. Again, Devin being an Ohio guy, certainly has some ties to the state that maybe he wants to hold on to, maybe big money, maybe he doesn't want to be a long-term coach, I don't know. But, you know, replacing an assistant wide receivers coach at Ohio State is a little bit different. We've seen the Buckeyes really lean into former players. I know it's kind of the fun thing to do. As soon as a coaching spot comes open on the staff, people are questioning, hey, what's it like for, how about this guy being, I saw a coaching list of Chris Carter, number one on the wide receiver board list for someone on Twitter. I'm like, they're not going to hire someone who's never been a coach before. But if I had to really wonder or worry, okay, so I'm not Ryan Day. I'm not making the decisions about the offensive coordinator. I'm certainly not Brian Hartline making decisions about who he should look into taking to South Florida. The name on the Ohio State staff that I would like have my most ears up for would be Billy Fessler, because I think that Billy is, as a younger guy, really growing into the profession, I think he's really, really well regarded, and you want a quarterback's coach / offensive coordinator that you trust. And I know Brian and Billy have known each other for a long time and they trust each other. That's someone that I think would make a more sense from that perspective. So we'll see. But it's the problem when you don't have a black book full of coaches you've coached with and all that stuff, and Brian Hartline's only been a coach in one place, is that you have to draw from the place that you are. And so yep. the staffers, the support staff, that's where Ohio State is going to suffer the most losses from when it comes to Brian Hartline or anybody else who ends up leaving this offseason. Now, because we're in this mode of just postulating and hypothesizing, wouldn't it be nice, the thing that we talked about like 2 years ago, now that JT Barrett has been a quarterbacks coach in the NFL for a couple of years and coaching the Chicago.
Don't do it, Berm.
I'm just throwing it out there. If something happened with Billy Fessler, well, then you have what I think is a very natural fit to be the next quarterbacks coach at Ohio State if JT wanted to get into college, because my God, he would absolutely crush it as a recruiter and as a quarterbacks coach in college, and would be putting himself in a position to be in that conversation for the guy in charge at Ohio State years from now. So,
yeah, I mean, I would absolutely love to see it. I agree with everything you said. I think it would be a huge deal to bring JT Barrett home. I think when, you know, Chris Carter is not a coaching candidate. You mentioned earlier this week, Santonio Holmes has got into coaching. You know, if he wants to test that route, I don't think you can bring him in immediately after 1 year in coaching as a full-time position. But, you know, if you have to replace Devin Jordan, that could potentially be an option there for Santonio. The one name that is a former player that has now been coaching for a decade who could coach both quarterbacks or wide receivers, which I still believe, like, at some point he would be worthy of the opportunity, would be Kenny Guyton. So he's at Wisconsin right now. It's not like their wide receivers lit the world on fire, but he has coached at multiple stops with high level of success, including in the SEC. He is as personable as they come. I think he can handle the recruiting stuff, no problem. So if we're, you know, dipping into that next level, and if you think that it's a priority that they have some understanding of the Blocko, the lay of the land, what it's like to work in the Woody, what's it like to play in the Horseshoe. I mean, Kenny Guyton and JT Barrett now have this level of experience with both of them where they make a lot of sense too. Will it get to that point? I don't know. I mean, we keep saying that it's early on, and it would be, I know you and I both would love for this process to wrap up, and so that, you know, the shifting sands or the dramatic turns and some of it is like not even real turns, just fictional turns with how the coaching cycle works. Like, it'd be great to fast forward to the end of it and not have to do hot board conversations and all that stuff. But as we said, Ryan Day is going to take his time on that. And if it gets to the point where he needs to have assistant wide receivers coaches or fill the wide receiver coach position from outside, you know, I think those people would certainly be on that list.
Do you think I'm crazy that, like, I think maybe the ideal scenario is not every assistant coach, let's be clear, not every assistant, but like you're mentioning guys that have a familiarity with Ohio State, guys who've either coached there before, like Billy Fessler had, or guys who have played there, like now we see Nate Ebner rising up at Ohio State. We've seen Devin Jordan, obviously Brian Hartline, James Laurinaitis, Tim Walton, et cetera. Like, I think it does matter in those assistants to have guys that, like, Ohio State matters to them, you know, and obviously it's different with the coordinators. And I did ask Ryan Day about that on Wednesday at his press conference. Like, is there any shift in his philosophy of the coordinators really not needing to be recruiters? And I think the easiest way to make that happen is if the other seven assistants are guys that love Ohio State and guys that have a real understanding of what it means to be a Buckeye. We've talked multiple times since James Laurinaitis took over as the linebackers coach at Ohio State about when James has press conferences, like, it is so easy to see that guy loves Ohio State in a way that translates and relates to recruits extremely well. So I do think that guys like Santonio, if you're looking as a potential replacement for Devin Jordan, again, in a potential situation, like, I think that makes a ton of sense. So we'll see where Ryan Day goes, but it does seem like he's trying to find this balance between, like, love of the block O and can you handle what I need you to handle? So it's not easy, but Ohio State and Ryan Day, especially in the last 4 years, has shown over and over again that he's going to nail these hires.
Yeah, no, I don't think that you're crazy about that. And I think that that's the difference. I think you hit it on the head. The head coach of the offense, the head coach of the defense can be guys that don't have to be day-to-day passionate recruiters. It helps if they take that on. Like, it seems like Matt Patricia is more than willing to do that, much more so than Jim Knowles was. But if the rest of your staff is able to handle that, which is ultimately what matters, like, I don't want to step on your toes here, but the position coaches are the ones that are leading those meetings on a day-to-day. Those are the relationships that are going to carry the day. And if there becomes a continued revolving door at offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, so be it. Those people just need to be your schematic geniuses that can organize game plans, that know how to get the practice schedules done, that know how to execute and won't be phased by the play calling responsibilities on Saturday. You know, delegating the rest of that is like a perfectly fine approach.
Yeah. And if that guy also happens to be super personable and the world's best hugger, great. You know, because if you listen to what Caden McDonald said on Wednesday night about Matt Patricia and the relationship he has and how he never had that before with and it was Kenyatta Jackson who also said that, like, they didn't have that before. And so if you can find somebody who fits both those roles, that's fantastic. But ultimately, Ohio State is, like, Ryan Day and the CEO transition and all that stuff has been so ongoing over the last few years, but, like, now it seems like he's really, really dialed into it, and I think that that's the way he wants to go.
All right, so we'll smash through these last two that we had in here, ready to go, because we have gone a very long on a Freaky Friday already, and we do have another show coming later on today. Those bold predictions. Gary said, "Why was there no controversy about the C.J. Donaldson touchdown?" I was outraged. I made a point of it after the game. Well, I don't know. I guess because it was a 18-point victory, they didn't have to stress about it. I was confused about a number of things in the way they were officiated on Saturday. The C.J. Donaldson touchdown and then the overturning Julian Sain sneak immediately after that didn't make a ton of sense to me, especially if you were allowed to headbutt an official and not get ejected. So the officiating was bad. I think by and large it always is in the game. But he also sent in a number of things about the way Ryan Day approached the play calling, the way Brian Hartline approached the play calling, the aggressiveness, and he liked the throws to open the game because it showed an open mind. It didn't work, but it did set the tone.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Day on television talking to Jenny Taft of Fox before the game, right before opening kickoff, said, we're going to come out firing. Like, and rewatching the game, you're like, oh, okay. He didn't leave any doubt about that, and that was the plan. You have to do that. You can't spend all year long talking about how you're intentionally trying to slow things down for the big games that matter and then come out and do the same thing in the big games that matter. So you have to be able to change the philosophy, and Ohio State is one of the few programs in the nation that has an offense that can do whatever they want. So It's not a surprise that that happened, especially with the weather that was expected in the second half of that game for Ohio State to come out and try to throw some punches early. As far as the CJ Donaldson thing, I don't know. I was on the field. It looked like a clear touchdown to me. I was, you know, 20 yards away from it at the other corner of the end zone. The fact that that didn't get overturned is insane to me. The fact that Julian Sain's touchdown that got overturned was ever ruled a touchdown was insane to me because that was so clearly not a touchdown. But, you know, if here's a secret. If you're an Ohio State fan and you're listening to the show, so you probably are. So, America, here's the deal. When you are talking to your friend of a friend, since none of us have friends who are Michigan fans, right, when you're talking to a friend of a friend and their friend is a Michigan fan, and they say, well, the Jeremiah Smith touchdown shouldn't have counted. And you say, but the C.J. Donaldson one should have. And then you say, and the Ronnie Bell one 2 years ago shouldn't have. So then you're like, okay, well, now we're even. Even Steven. But it all worked out. Game's over. Buckeyes won.
Also, the Jeremiah Smith touchdown was a
should touchdown. Have been a touchdown. I know, but you know, there's people who are, the mechanic up there in Ann Arbor who runs their football program was saying that it shouldn't have been. So.
Oh, well, I'm not sure that he knows anything about anything. But all right, Scott sent one in. He went up to the Big House, had so much fun in Ann Arbor last weekend, just love watching this team. He was online looking up the Saturday schedule and noticed that 11 years ago to the day was December 6th, and that was 59-0. Not a prediction, but as we said in the live show, it doesn't have to be close. So that wasn't a question, but I thought that was cool that he sent that along. He did some research for us. No, Ohio State does not have to win 59-0. You know, Ryan Day, I don't think, is trying to win any game 59-0 anymore.
Let me ask you this question. Ohio State, Indiana, number one versus number two, number one, number two defenses in the country, two of the top offenses in the country, two of the top four in the Heisman odds at quarterback, two of the best receiver rooms in the country, two of the most productive and efficient running games in the country, two of the best offensive lines in the country, two of the best defensive lines in the country. What qualifies as a blowout in this game? Two scores,
I think. I mean,
14-point win, 13-point win?
Yeah.
Or is it just game control?
Well, what qualifies as a blowout? I mean, I think there's a... Let me put it this way. 27-9 was an absolute blowout. And when I mentioned this on Thursday, it's not just individual awards. It's also like game scores where Ohio State has broken people's brains.
Yeah.
That game was never in doubt last week after they forced that second field goal. And when they were up by two scores, like, well, this game is over. And I have felt that way in every game Ohio State has played since they set the tone against Texas. Like, that 14-7 never felt like it was in doubt. And this offense is certainly not the same as it was then, but that's why I say two scores. And that wouldn't be the same for everybody else because you could tack on a backdoor score, you know, fourth quarter, last one for margin of victory or whatever else, and be like, well, 35-21, that wasn't a blowout. It was really close throughout. And I don't feel that that's the same case for Ohio State. If they won by that score on Saturday night, I feel like, well, Indiana probably played a really good game to score more points on the Silver Bullets than anybody else all year, but Ohio State was never in danger of losing it. So yeah. I feel like two scores is now the standard for this team. And that makes it a blowout because of the defense.
My score prediction on Monday when we did the live show at Roosters was 31-13. And like, the more I've been thinking about this game through the week, and I'm like, I'm not trying to disrespect Indiana when I say that I don't think that they are anywhere near as talented as Ohio State and that the game doesn't have to be close. Because in my opinion, if Ohio State plays its best game, they will win this game by three scores. So I don't, it's not meant to be a knock on Indiana. And I hope that I'm not coming across as dismissing them because obviously they've taken care of their business and lost two games in the last 2 years. And it was to the national championship teams a year ago and the two teams that are probably, if people are being honest with themselves, the national championship favorites this year between Ohio State and Notre Dame. So if provided Notre Dame finds a way to sneak into the playoffs, but like it's
pretty big if at this point,
let's hope. If you're an Ohio State fan, you got to be hoping Notre Dame doesn't get in the playoff. You do not. That team is playing crazy good football right now, and they're only getting more and more confident. So and like at some point, the odds of like beating Marcus Freeman in Notre Dame four times in 5 years because like it starts to shrink. You start to get those odds lessening. So I just think that it's going to be a really interesting game. I'm excited to get over to Indianapolis this morning for us to continue talking about it with Adam King over at Lucas Oil Stadium. Lucas Oil, Lucas Oil Stadium.
The Hoosier Dome.
Hoosier Dome. It's going to be a fun day. We're going to, it's now, well, we've been doing the show for a long time. It's now about 10 a.m. Yeah. on Friday morning. And we're going to get ready to get on the road for what's Indiana State nickname? The Hoosier State? Do they have another one? Do they have like a better nickname that's not like just saying what they are, because nobody knows what a Hoosier is?
The Bison State.
Is that it?
No, it's the Hoosier State.
Hold on. They got to have other state nicknames, right?
They have to have other state nicknames.
Yeah, like, don't they? I guess it's the Hoosier State. So you just like being named, your state nickname is just like whatever we call our residents?
I don't know.
Indiana. No wonder you've never won a Big Ten championship.
I haven't had to pay taxes in Indiana since 2020. So excited for that opportunity again as we get back over there. We will have another episode of The Beat. We will have bold predictions for you later. So we'll get those final score calls. We'll have Adam King, Television's Adam King, looped into that. We'll all make some bold peas to get ready and help tide you over for Saturday night primetime on, is it on Fox? Yeah, it's on Fox. Of course it is. It's the Big Ten Championship. It's number one versus number two. Thanks for joining us to start your Friday and this championship weekend with a Freaky Friday mailbag brought to you by our friends at the Waterworks. We'll talk to you later from Indianapolis. We'll see you.